comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Kevin Smith Show. You caught me doing some office work real quick, right at the beginning here. Sorry about that. I was typing a message to our guest. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. Welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. Wherever you happen to be, all over this planet, I'm delighted that you've chosen to be here at the Kevin Smith Show. I'm here because you have a right to know. I'm here because you matter. You know, one of the most compelling mysteries, I guess you could call it a mystery. I'm not sure how you would categorize it, but we'll call it a mystery, one of the most compelling mysteries of all human history has to be the Ark of the Covenant. You know, one of the Indiana Jones movies was, the Lost Ark or something like Indiana Jones and the Lost Ark or something like that. But it was about Indiana Jones trying to find the Ark of the Covenant and to get it before the Nazis could get it. Very interesting movie, and it was a huge hit. But it was all about the Ark of the Covenant. What do you know about it? Do you even know what it was or what it's alleged to be? Did you know it was missing? And do you know how long it's been missing? And why are there so many people out trying to find it across the globe and across the years? Why so many people trying to find it? Well, my guest tonight is Jerry Cannon, and Jerry is one of those explorers out there trying to discover where it is, and we're going to be talking with him about what it is and when it went missing and where he thinks it is and why, and why look. So it's a big mystery. We've got, a stellar guest to talk about that great mystery of human history. He'll join us on the other side of the break. Now, tonight is K-Files night, and that means that right after the show, we start sending out our free weekly newsletter. And if you are subscribed, you will get it. If you are not subscribed, you will not get it. It's that simple. To be subscribed, all you have to do is get over to my website, click where it says K-Files, and subscribe. Now, you'll get an email automatically, and it's got a link in it that you have to click to activate that subscription. If you don't do that, you're not subscribed. So I once in a while get email from somebody, and they say, well, you know, I subscribed, but I haven't been getting the K-Files. And when I start looking, I find their subscription in the group that hasn't been activated. Well, our software won't send it to you unless you activate your subscription. Be sure you do that. All right, we're going to step away for break. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Jerry Cannon about the Ark of the Covenant. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. As I said at the top of the show, My guest this evening is Jerry Cannon. Jerry joins us tonight from Spain, and through the wonders of modern technology and Skype, he is with us. Jerry, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me, although it's 4 a.m. in the morning here, so I'm just about awake. I'm down in southern Spain. I'm actually 20 miles away from Gibraltar, which is just across the straits to Morocco, where the Pillars of Hercules is, in front of that somewhere, according to legend, is the Atlantis. We don't know.
Let me ask you, Jerry, we see the name Jerry Cannon, we hear a British accent, and yet you're in Spain. What's the score there?
Well, I'm 77 years old, born April the 6th, 1935. I went over to America in 1978-79, and I went into retirement, and all these things started happening, and when they happened, I somehow found myself having to come to Spain. And without coming to Spain, none of this would have actually transpired. So I didn't really know anything about the Ark at the time. This is back in 1998. And all this happened, actually. That's when I was over here and things started really snowballing.
All right. Now you're near Gibraltar, and you're not far from where I spent some time as well. I was in Malaga, which of course is on the Costa del Sol, a little bit further to the east from where you are.
Yeah, that's not too far away. I'm down near a place called Estepona, so you've probably not heard about that too.
Yeah, well, we're delighted that you are joining us. Suddenly we're hearing what sounds like a fan or some kind of motor running.
You're picking up everything. Okay, I'm going to see if I can turn off another computer. Let's see what happens there. See if that helps you.
Well, I just didn't know if it was interference we were hearing on the line. It was pretty loud. But okay, so you're in Spain, and you started your quest for the Ark after you retired.
That's right. I think it all really, really started when I was doing my army, my 2 years army, and everybody, 18 years old did their 2 years army subscription. And I was out in Egypt, near the canal zone, which is near where the Suez Canal is. And apparently, this is where the Exodus crossed. Nobody knows exactly the time of the Exodus. The rabbis believe it was about 1313 BC. Other scholars think it's about 1440 BC. So it's going to be round about that time frame, but nobody knows exactly. First of all, there's never really been any archaeological evidence that the Exodus ever happened. That could be because if it did happen and the Pharaoh was humiliated, he might have taken any trace of the Exodus off the map. No history was recorded about it. We don't know. I mean, hopefully something can be found.
Yeah, the Egyptians actually have a track record of doing that sort of thing. There's not much to tell us about a particular pharaoh by the name of Akhenaten. There's a little bit, but not much, because he was really despised by the majority. Also, there are pharaohs that we have come to know were pharaohs that are not in the official list of the kings. And so, they kind of have a track record of doing that, erasing parts of history they just didn't care for. Sort of like it happens in our country. They don't like a particular thing in history, they just revise it, you know, and say something else about it, or say nothing about it. And then the next generation knows nothing about it. All right, so for those who are new to this topic of the Ark of the Covenant, let's begin with, what the heck is it? What is the Ark of the Covenant?
Well, the Ark of the Covenant, according to Exodus, was made purely to put the Ten Commandments in, which Moses took down from the mountain. Actually, that they needed a container which would more or less keep it well protected. It's a box made out of acacia wood. That's acacia tree. The reason why they used acacia wood, A, because it was there, or possibly because acacia wood is a very, very strong wood. It was probably one of the hardest woods there at the time. And not only was it a hard wood, but no insects can penetrate it. So it was double protection. The size of the box was 2.5 by 1.5 by 1.5 cubics. Now, a cubic is approximately 18 inches. What they did, the head guy of the land, or whoever it was, they measured from the tip of his finger to his elbow, and that they called a cubic. So that works out about 45 inches long by 27 inches wide and 27 inches high. Now, it was lined inside and out with beaten gold. So the walls were protected with beaten gold. And on top of the box was what they call a mercy seat. And apparently that's where an entity, God, would probably appear, or in a vision to the priest or who anyone was out there. And above this were two cherubim. The translation of cherubim in the Old Testament, a lot of people think they're angels or whatever, we don't know, but they were called cherubim. They were either half human and half animal, we don't know. I've come up to my own idea. But they had wings over each wing was more or less touching over the top, the tips. So it actually shielded and protected this mercy seat. And on either side of the box were four rings, two front, two back on either side. And there was a pole also made of acacia wood and lined with gold on each side. So everything was wood and gold. And that is actually the Ark.
Yeah, it's not small, but it's not really gigantic either. The reason for those poles is now what we know about the Ark of the Covenant, of course, we get from Hebrew scriptures, because this was a Hebrew object. It's something built by the Hebrews, and it was deemed by them to be excessively holy. And their story was that if anybody touched the ark except the high priest, then they would die. And even the priests had to have special clothing on when they touched the ark. And there's a story about the ark being transported on a cart, and it was rocking as the cart was rocking, and it almost rocked over and fell off the cart. A man reached up to steady it. He did steady it. It didn't fall off the cart, and it zapped him and killed him. This made King David very angry with God, as a matter of fact. This ark, there have been a lot of people who have speculated, especially in our day, that it maybe was some type of communication device. Maybe it was something that gathered energy out of the ether. And, all kinds of speculations. And they are speculations. We don't know about that. But what we know is that the Ark was considered excessively holy. And then it went missing from Jewish history. When did it go missing, and how?
Well, the last mention in Exodus, in the scriptures, was that when King David's son built the elaborate temple, and the elaborate temple was the first temple that's in Jerusalem on Temple Mount. When they built that, built actually for the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant was to go there, and that they'd be praying and everything else around there. And nobody knows the exact date when the temple was built, but it was around about 1000 BC. So we don't know what happened exactly to the Ark between, let's say 1440 to 1000. It was about 400 years. When the Ark was put in there, it was mentioned that the Ark and the tablets of stone were put into the Ark, and that was the last actual mention in the five books of Moses about the Ark. So nobody knows what happened. They could speculate what happened. We don't know. A lot of people have been looking through the scriptures for clues and everything else, but according to work I've been doing, it wouldn't be in there in the scriptures of what happened, because it seems as though it had been stolen. Let me start off by saying I had a near-death experience back in 1960, which might have triggered off a lot of things. I was driving an automobile in England, and on the back roads, and they weren't actually signposted, and I collided with another vehicle, and my vehicle jumped over about six or seven times, rolled over, smashed up into against a brick wall. Fortunately, the window was open. I was lucky to crawl out, and after a few minutes, I'm walking around dazed, and I can hear people saying, well, whoever's in that car must have surely been dead. And I'm thinking I'm a ghost. I said to them, you better pinch me, because I'm the guy in the vehicle. Whether I had a near-death experience, I don't know. But I started having some psychic experiences with psychics, which all seemed positive, but that's a bit of a long story. And in 1979, we immigrated to California, and we bought our dream house a few years later in Las Vegas. It was Chinese New Year. My wife, actually named Mary, she's Chinese. And I had a dream, a very powerful dream of numbers, 3, 6, and 9. I've never dreamt just numbers, but especially these big numbers floating around me. And my wife told me in the morning that this means 9 is longevity. And apparently the Beijing emperor, anybody went to him, they had to bow down 9 times. And Kowloon, which is an area, a peninsula off of China, that's actually called the 9 Dragons. So I found that 9 was a very, very special number. If you multiply 9 with any other number, you'll always get 9. 2 nines are 18, 8 and 1 is 9, etc., etc. A lot of things one could do with a number, but I won't get into too much numerology. But I did a calculation years ago which was quite interesting. I took the 7 days of creation and the one entity, and I divided the 7 into 1, and I come up with a figure of 142857.142857 into infinity. It was a never-ending number. It was quite strange. It's like an infinite God or whatever. But those particular numbers, 142857, are all the cardinal numbers except 3, 6, and 9. But when you add those numbers up, they actually come to 9, 1, 4, 2, 9, 8, 5, 7. Anyhow, I had a little office in my house. I was now retired from furniture business. I had a furniture business and an auction gallery in Las Vegas. And I went into it semi-retirement, and I opened up a little travel agency, a travel agency course, and used one of my rooms to sell tickets. People used to come in and stuff like that. And on the wall was a large map of the world, and it was just there for decoration. And one morning, about 7 o'clock in the morning, I'm in the office to calculate some travel tickets and things like that, and something prompted me to walk over to this big map, as though I was like hypnotized or whatever. And I'm looking at the center of the map, and I'm saying to myself, this is the center of the world. And I took a large ruler and went from top right to bottom left, and top left to bottom right, made a cross, and I put my finger in the center where the cross was, and my index finger in my right hand, I'm right-handed, and it moved over to the right, and it stopped into a place in Egypt's desert. And my finger got very, very hot, and I pulled it away, and got a bit nervous. I told my wife, she said, don't worry about that, you're dreaming, or get on with your own work. And a few months later, I met a man who was called Douglas Bruce, who was one of my clients, and he introduced me to a Mormon scientist called Harvey Jepson. Now, Harvey Jepson was in his late 70s, and he invented a product where he could mix any substance, including sand, into a very, very hard material, in fact, 8 times harder than concrete. And they had all this tested by laboratories and everything else, blocks of salt and wood and a whole lot of wood chippings and everything. And his accountant was a bit of a crook, saw that he could make a lot of money, and he had a lot of clients, and they all invested money in this product, and he ran off with about $2.5 million or thereabouts. And the poor Mormon was left holding the baby, and they all thought he was into it. And he had a lot of his things confiscated by the bank. And one of the guys who he was working with, he bought everything from the bank, although they couldn't do anything because the guy had a secret. And I got introduced to this him, and it was around about the time when the Kuwait War had finished. You remember the Kuwait War back in 1992? You remember that, Kevin?
Are you talking about what we generally hear called the first Gulf War?
Yeah, that's the one.
Okay.
Okay. At that time, they had fires in the oil wells, which they couldn't put out. And I was going to England around about that time when it was all finished.
Okay, Jerry, we're going to have to hold up right there because we have a break coming up. But we'll pick up right here with what was happening in your story at about the time of the Kuwait War when we get back from this break. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking this evening with Jerry Cannon, and he has done extensive study and actually searching for the Ark of the Covenant. And he's got an amazing story. I've talked with him at length about it, and I think it's really a unique story. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and my guest this evening, Jerry Cannon. And Jerry, as we went away for break, we had to interrupt your story. You were telling us about something that happened at about the time of the Kuwait War.
Yeah, this Harvey Jepson, he actually brought me a couple of samples. One was a small block, about 4 inches square, of salt. And with his process, I couldn't smash it with a sledgehammer. It was so hard. He even had some wood chippings, which one couldn't even burn with it, with one of these burners. It just wouldn't burn through his process. And he also had a block of sand, and he made it to look like it was an actual rock. And I didn't realize at the time, but later on I was thinking to myself, how were the pyramids built? I know we're going a bit off subject. And it dawned on me that they could have used synthetic rock because, the rocks they've got there now, there's about 2.25 million blocks in the Great Pyramid. And all these joints are wafer thin joints. And to put them up there was, first of all, that there was no sign of any of these boulders around. And they said they had to, according to the Egyptians, they had to bring them up from the Nile. And even if they brought them up from the Nile, how are they going to put them into place? and if they use synthetic rock, which another guy on the internet called Davidovits, Joseph Davidovits, a Frenchman, he's also come up with the same idea, because he made a polymyra, which he formed into actual, looked like rock. So this is a way they could have just made more or less a mould and put one mould on top of another and poured the sand, which is readily available, to build them. It's only a theory. Anyhow, we went over to Kuwait. Harvey wanted me to become a partner with him. He said he can't sell the product in the USA because he had problems, they were taken away. And the Kuwait embassy, I went up to see them, and I met the princes about 3 days after the Kuwait war finished, Gulf War finished. And I called Harvey, phoned up Harvey, he was up in Utah, and he says, yes, they can put out the fires. And he says, we can put sand and put this product with sand that would just block everything up. And I was on television, radio, all the newspapers promoting this. It was a new wonder. We called it Bonditol. And about 2 weeks later, my wife says, well, if we're going to do this, it's no good living in England, it's too cold a country, let's go to somewhere warm. We can't live in America because it's going to be a big business. So we chose Spain, and that's why I was down here, and I suppose that's why I was meant to be down here. And we went back to England doing the promotion, and I got a letter from a solicitor in the USA saying, I must not sell this product, it doesn't belong to Harvey, and everything was squashed. But I had a lot of samples to take back from a lot of building manufacturers in the UK, and when I got back to America, Harvey disappeared. Couldn't get hold of him. A couple of years later, we found out that he died, and his secret went with him. And of course, I become the multimillionaire from this product. What would happen? He actually wanted to make all this to help homeless people and people around the world putting up inexpensive homes using this. So that was that. Anyhow, one morning I said to my wife, well, you know, we're going to learn Spanish, because she's Chinese, she couldn't do it. So we took some lessons, and she couldn't pronounce the words properly, and I thought, well, maybe we can get a hypnosis who could put her into a past life. I heard of this regression, where she might have been speaking Spanish or something like that. And we found a hypnotist in Las Vegas called Evelyn Schiff, an elderly woman. She actually regressed people and tried to find out problems that they had in this life, and if she could find them in their past life, she was curing them. So she was quite successful. She wasn't in it for money, whether she had plenty of money, she just wanted to do this to help people. And she heard what I wanted to do, and she came over to the house and hypnotized my wife first time. And we had the guy who gave us the lessons with us, and under hypnosis he started calling out names and pronunciations of Spanish, and when she woke up and came out of the trance, she could actually speak and say these phrases with imperfection. So it was working. And we got friendly with this Evelyn Schiff. In fact, she wouldn't take any money for it, but we wined her and dined her a few times. And she told us one day over a dinner that she had a friend who had a walk-in. Do you know what a walk-in is?
Yes, I do.
Well, yeah, your listeners probably...
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead, so tell them.
It's apparently, it's when an entity gets into your body and it will more or less push them or tell them what to do or things would happen, and this would be an entity. Whether it was your spirit guide, we don't know, but there's all different ways. And then she also talks about automatic writing, and that's when she says you put a pencil in your hand or writing object on a blank piece of paper in a quiet room, nobody around, and put it down, and it will start, close your eyes, it will start moving, and look down, you'll get messages. And one morning I'm sitting in my same office where this map of the world was, with a cross on it, and I put my pen on a blank piece of paper. I had some time waiting. I know I had a call focal coming in about an hour later, and it was early, so. And after a few minutes, with my eyes closed, it started moving. And I opened my eyes, looked down, and three words on the page were F-I-N-D-T-H-E-A-R-K, find the ark. Didn't mean nothing to me. I thought, what's this writing? Where's this coming from? So I did that three times, and the same thing, find the ark, came down. In fact, I've still got the paper what was written on. I kept all my papers and all my photographs of all what I'm going to talk about, what we've got everything here. And I'm saying to myself, where's this message coming from? What ark? Find the ark. I don't understand it. I'm saying, where's it all coming from? And I close my eyes again. And on the page, when I opened it, there's the word Mosec, M-O-S-E-C. And it's a strange word. And I'm saying to myself, I've heard of Moses. I mean, I'm not that religious guy, but I have heard of, you know, most people heard of Moses. And I'm saying to myself, is this Moses? It's not Mosec, it's Moses. But on the page, again, three times, Mosec, M-O-S-E-C. Still didn't mean anything to me, so I closed my eyes and I put my hand down and started to write again. And all of a sudden I felt my arm move over to the left-hand side of my desk, and I'm making a cross, small cross and a circle, hurriedly, in one spot. And I opened my eyes, and in front of me was a huge map from a world atlas, which is on my shelf. And whether you believe it or not, that atlas was no way on my table when I started. There's no reason why I had to have an atlas of the world there.
So you don't know how it got there, is that right?
Sorry?
You don't know how it got there, is that right?
I do not know how it got there. It was on my shelf. I very rarely use it. It was actually called the Times Atlas. It's quite a big volume. It's about 2 foot by about 1 foot huge, and it was opened up to the actual world map on the front, which is inside the front cover. And when I looked down, I found that the cross and the circle was exactly the same place where the cross and circle was, where the cross was on the world map.
The world map that was on your wall.
Was on the map, on the wall, yeah. Uh-huh. Exactly the same place. I mean, it was incredible. And, you know, my wife says, you better go and talk to Evelyn and see what she makes of this. And she put me under regression, and apparently it was about the time of Moses getting the Ten Commandments. I still didn't know about the Ark or anything like this till later on, and when she told me that this Ark could have been the Ark of the Covenant, and the entity could have come into me, and I picked up this entity. She knew I was in the army in Egypt. I crossed this path when I was in Egypt, and when I now have retired, he's entered me, and is pushing me to find this ark. And she says the Ark of the Covenant. Anyhow, we sold our house in Las Vegas, and we moved over to Spain. And we had to do a lot of work reforming our house and getting everything straight. And my wife had a frozen shoulder, that she gets a pain in her shoulder. I don't know what people, you know what a frozen shoulder is. But the doctor says that they can't really cure it, it will just go away by itself. And somebody says, well, why don't you go to a faith healer? There's an actual exhibition of psychics and faith healers. We went there, and talked to a couple of them, they couldn't help us. And somebody mentioned that my wife should have a reading, psychic reading. And I'd already had reading before in England, all turned out positive, and I thought, yeah, good idea, it's a birthday coming up. So we invited this woman to come to our house the following week, and a gypsy sort of a woman appeared, her name was Giovanna, and she came to the house and she sat down with my wife. I gave her about $30 for the session. And it was a lot of rubbish. She didn't tell her anything good. And as she's leaving, she says to me, I think I should do a reading for you. And I thought, no way, Jose, I've just lost $30. I don't want to put any more in. She must have read my mind, because she says, I'm not charging you, I have to do this. I says, fine, if you're going to do it, let's do it. After a few minutes, she sat sitting next to me. She closed her eyes and says she sees numbers running around me. And I just listen. She says, numbers 3, 6, and 9. And she says, I'm looking for a gold box. And I've never told anybody in Spain about this and how she picked this up. Well, she did, obviously. And she says to me, if you go, I still didn't say anything to her to confirm what she said, but I just let her talk on. And she said, it's in the desert, somewhere in Egypt. She says, if you want to find it, all these are her words, go through all your notes and look between the lines. I didn't know what she meant. I gave her $30 anyway when she left. That night, in the middle of the night, I woke up and something prompted me to go to my bookshelf, pick up my atlas and look where this cross and circles were, and I realized that between the lines were the coordinates lines. And you couldn't see it exactly because it was a cross which covers a little bit, but I got roughly a coordinate which was in the western desert of Egypt. And I thought this was interesting and that could be the place wherever it was. Anyhow, a few weeks later, my wife had listened to the radio and she heard of a woman called Joyce Morgan, an English woman, who was talking. She was a psychic artist. What she would do, she would do a drawing of someone departed from the family or friend and then give you a reading, and that the drawing would be accurate. So I phoned her up and got the number from the radio station. All I wanted to talk about was automatic writing. Did she know anything about it? When she heard my voice, she said, I want you to come and see me. I says, fine, where do you live? And she told me a place, Fuengirola, which you probably know because you've lived out here, and that's about 100 miles, nearly enough, 80 miles from where I live. And I says, Joyce, it's too far for me to come over. If I have to pick up people from Malaga Airport, which is a close airport to us in Spain, I'll come and visit you. Otherwise, you're way out of the way and I've still got work to do, and actually I haven't even got my insurance for my car. Oh, no, she says, you're coming tomorrow. I said, Joyce, I couldn't come in tomorrow. I can't do it. And she was very adamant, and in the end, I just hung up. 2 minutes later, my phone rang. It was my insurance agent. And he said, your policy's ready for your car. It will be posted on to you. I said, well, don't want it posted on to me. Can I get it quickly? He said, well, the only way to do is to pick it up. I said, where is that? Near the airport. Near where Joyce Fuengirola. And I thought, wow. I said, okay. Put the phone down, phoned up Joyce, told her I'm coming to see her, with a chuckle at the end of the phone. I hear her saying, I told you you're coming to see me tomorrow, didn't I? And I thought, wow, how the hell did this woman know? I said, well, what are you charged for this session? And she says, nothing to you. She says, I normally don't charge people for these sessions. They normally give me a donation, but I don't want you to give me everything. I've got a lot of information for you. Please come and see me. So the following day, my wife and I went to see her. She lived in a place they call Serendipity.
Okay, we'll pick up right there in just a moment. We have to take a break, and we'll be back with Jerry Cannon. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, where we are talking this evening with Jerry Cannon, who is a researcher and I guess we could say explorer, who has been in search for the Ark of the Covenant for a number of years now. Jerry, when we left, you were going to see the psychic near Malaga, near the airport.
Yeah, well, but before I continue, how long have I got? Because a 20-year...
We do a two-hour show every night, Jerry.
I'm sorry?
It's a two-hour show every night.
Oh, good, good. Okay. Okay, yeah, we went to see this girl, Joyce Morgan, English woman. She was also in her 70s. She lived with her husband who was... he did a lot of healing. And that was a big converted farmhouse, which she took in homeless people and helped them before they could reposition their homes, and also animals. She was a very, very good woman, very, very good woman. My wife, she said, come in, and she wants to give her a session first. She says she's not charging for the session. Well, after a cup of tea, and she went in. 15 minutes later, she came out, clutching two pieces of paper. She says, whispered to me more or less that Joyce did a very good reading for her. She picked up a lot of things about her past, which she wouldn't have known. And she gave her a drawing of a woman who was in a Chinese attire, and she said that this woman had died, and she couldn't remember who she was, but Joyce said when she gets home, she will know who this woman was. Okay, Joyce says, come on, Jerry, you're next. So we went into a little room back of the house, and all there was two chairs, one either side of a wooden table. I sat down. She said, "I have to turn a tape recorder on." She said, "This has to be recorded." I said, "Why is that?" She said, "Because you'll need this for later on." I said, "Fine." So she put the tape recorder on, and she closed her eyes, and just like Giovanna, she kept muttering to herself, "Numbers, numbers, 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 numbers." And she's waving her arms about, and she says, 3, 6, and 9. And I got a shiver down my back. I thought, here we go again. She said, "I see these numbers floating around you." She says, "I don't know what they mean, but I've just got these big numbers running around you. And then I've got that you're looking for something in the desert." And there's no way she would have known this. I mean, it was just impossible. And again, she said, "It's a golden box." She says, "I want to draw it." And she sketched a box that looked similar to the Ark of the Covenant. And it wasn't exactly the one that I've thought of or what we've seen, but it had the poles on it and it had some figures on there and everything else. And I said, "What is this, Joyce?" She says, "I don't know." I said, "Well, what you've drawn, it looks like the Ark of the Covenant." And she said, "I don't know too much about the Ark of the Covenant, but that's something that you're looking for and going to find." She says, "But I want to draw you your spirit guide." I said, "Fine." And again, she did a quick sketch. It took a couple of minutes, a few minutes. I've never seen anybody to draw, and she was a very good artist. In fact, you saw these pictures, didn't you, Kevin?
Yes.
Yeah, because we're not on TV, and the listeners out there can't see what I'm drawing.
We are on TV.
On TV?
Yes, we are.
Oh, so you're showing the pictures, can you? They can see the pictures.
No, you're not sending me any video.
Ah, okay. All right, well, it's on my website. They can see that later on with these pictures. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, she quickly drew a guy that looked like he came out of the Bible. He looked like a biblical character with massive white hair and a huge V-shaped beard. And I said to Joyce, "How will I know this is my spirit guide?" She says, "When you get home, you will realize this is your spirit guide." I says, "Fine." She said, "I want you to come and see me tomorrow because she's got a session going on where she gets people in the circle and then she does meditation. But she says, let me tell you a little bit about your past." She picked up my parents' names. My father died. And she picked up my grandparents, where they come from. She told me that I have a relative in South America who was very ill. All this was true. And she really blew my mind when she says, "You've got a close relative in China." Well, I thought to myself, well, I must have a lot of relatives. My wife's Chinese. And she says, "No, this is a cousin or an uncle." And she stopped. She says, "Do you have a brother in China?" And I says, "Yes, my brother was just promoted." He was a professor, and he was just promoted as a lecturer in Hong Kong. And how she picked all this up, it's just amazing. I mean, she was well gifted. Anyway, we got home that night, and I'm making a cup of tea, and my wife goes in the other room, comes out a few minutes later, holding a photograph. And it's a picture of a girl, which was exactly the same as Joyce had drawn. I says, "Who is that?" She says, "She's got all about it. It's an old school friend of hers." So I said, "Well, is she dead?" She says, "She shouldn't think so. She's not that old." I said, "Can we find out?" So we said, "Well, it's too late to call Hong Kong at the time, but we called England." She called one of her friends or relatives who knew her. She came off the phone looking a bit white. She says, "The girl's actually died 4 years ago." So Joyce picked all this up. It was just amazing. I said, "Let's have a look at this drawing she did of this guy." And I had a look at it, and I couldn't see nothing interesting on there. My wife said, "Look at the eye. There might be something in the eye." And we looked in the eyes, and on the right eye looked like a map of the Sinai Peninsula. And I thought to myself, well, this more indicate that's where the Ark of the Covenant was made. Maybe this is my spirit guide. It seemed true. following day we went to see her, and I told you, yes, you did a good drawing and everything was right. And I said to her before the session started, do you know the name of this guy? And she said, I don't know the name, but I know it can tell you it begins with the letter M. And right away my mind went back to this Mosek, and I told her about exactly what happened and stuff like that there. We went into the session, and there was 9 of us in this sitting. We all sat around a candle in the middle of the room, and she put us all in meditation. I fell asleep, actually. I'm sure I fell asleep because I was tired of these long journeys and all this stuff going on. When she woke us all up and come out, and even me, everybody in the room was foreign people, and they had translators, and a woman was talking in German, actually, and she's pointing to me, and when we translated, apparently, she was, according to Joyce, she was a very good psychic, and she picked up a figure standing over me, behind me, who had a white beard and white hair. And when we showed her the picture later when we were having some tea in her house, she says this is the guy that she saw. Anyhow, we went to Joyce a few times after that, and I started channeling, and this guy Mosek was coming through all the time in a very crackled voice. And Joyce says that possibly he had his tank taken out and that he couldn't talk very properly. This is why. The other thing it prompted me was that Moses, he could have been a reincarnation of Moses, I don't know, because Moses couldn't talk properly, and he had his brother Aaron, who became the high priest. He was his spokesman afterwards. I don't know whether you know the Bible, that Moses had a bad speech. Did you know that?
Yes. He had a speech impediment, and right, his brother Aaron was his mouthpiece.
That's right, okay. Anyhow, when we had all this channeling, apparently he was telling us, crackling voice, that the ark, he had stolen the Ark of the Covenant, and maybe this is why things had happened, I don't know. Anyhow, Joyce said to me at one of the sessions, you can't come to any more sessions because you're disturbing everybody with all this screaming and shouting. She'd do it all privately. She wouldn't charge me anything, but we used to give her a lot of gifts. She says, one session, she says, I'm going to draw you a cave in the Egypt desert. I've never been to Egypt. She says, but I'm going to draw you this cave. And she hurriedly drew the cave. She says, this is where the Ark of the Covenant is. It's either in the cave or out the cave, because the cave was probably much larger thousands of years ago. When this ark was taken to this cave, and she did this cave, and it looked like a freestanding cave. And I says, Joyce, there's no such thing as a freestanding cave. And she got a pencil and she just made a half circle over the top. Yeah, she says, more like an igloo, just standing out there. She's probably weathered over the years, and it was probably in the mountainside, and it's come down, earthquakes or whatever it was, and that's what it was. She said, well, I'm going to give you some landmarks. The landmarks are these. If you find the landmarks, you know it's a cave. The landmarks is, as you can see in the drawing, she said, there's a pyramid-shaped hill behind it with a flat top. She says, that's one landmark. In front of the cave, there's a dried-up river, because in years ago there was a river there, and that's why the cave was there. It was a stopping place in transit going to some place, wherever, and the river was there, and that's where the cave was there for people to stay in.
All right, we have to step away for a break, and when we come back we will continue hearing this account from Jerry Cannon of his search for the Ark of the Covenant. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. This is Kevin Smith, and for those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. I'm delighted you are here, and you have my sincere sympathy for whatever kept you away from the first hour. We are talking this evening with Jerry Cannon, and he's relating to us his story about how it is that he, after retiring, came to be a searcher for the Lost Ark of the Covenant, and the sort of mysterious path that he trod getting there. Jerry, we went away for break, and when we went away, you were telling us about the psychic was telling you certain signs to look for, sort of landmarks to look for this cave. And now, did she say that this cave contained the Ark of the Covenant?
She says, this is where the Ark of the Covenant is buried.
Okay.
And she gave me the landmarks. One was a pyramid-shaped hill in the background with a flat top. In front of it would be, in front of the cave would be a dried-up river. All around the cave will be bones. She says, you'd have to identify the cave because that you might find other caves in Egypt, but this, you have to have this particular one. There'd be skeleton bones. She didn't know whether they're going to be human or animal, but there'd be skeleton bones there. And there'd be two entrances to the cave. There'd be a rear entrance. And when you find next to the cave or near the cave, a huge, about 40 foot high, enormous, she says, rock in the shape of a tree. And she said, but when you go there and find the cave, there's only going to be one other person with you. If there's more than one, you won't find it. She then went on and saying that I'm going to find something else in Egypt relating to ancient Egypt, but she didn't know what, but something quite major. And I said, well, give me an idea what. She said, I can't, just, I know you're going to find something else to do with ancient Egypt. She went on saying that I'm going to Israel, and when I go to Israel for a tour or vacation, because I've never been there before, she said, I'm going to find an ancient map, and this will be something to be with what I'm doing. And I said to her, Joyce, I said, I don't think we go to Israel because we made quite a bit of money when we, between you and we made quite a bit of money when I was in business in America and England. When we came to Spain, we invested it into a bank, and the bank went bust, and we lost more or less 99% of it, and the same as a lot of other people did. There was a bit, I don't know, you probably a bit before your time when a big bank went bust. So I said, I haven't got the money to go there. She said, but you'll get the money, don't worry. And 2 months later, my mother died, and I had to have someone to look after the house because Mary and I, my wife, went over to England for the funeral. And we got a neighbour to look after our dogs, to feed our dogs and water the dogs, and he came in the house, and apparently he'd left the water running, and when we got back, we found the floor was flooded and all our carpets were ruined, and we had some quite expensive Persian carpets on there. So I called the insurance agent. He says, I don't think you're going to be covered because you didn't itemize them. But 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, a check arrived for about $4,000. And I called the agent and says, well, I said, thank you very much, I've got the check. He said, well, I can't see why you got the check because you're not supposed to have had it, but if you've got it, you've got it. That's good. Anyhow, we took him out for dinner, and that was, I said to my wife, let's go to Israel for holiday. And we went to Israel for a 14-day tour. I've never been there before. And when we were over there touring around, the tour agency said to me, would my wife and I like to go to Sinai? I said, well, that's not on our itinerary. He said, no, but two people have cancelled a trip because they were unwell and they had to go back to England. And there's free tickets, and you don't have to pay. You can go for 2 days to Mount Sinai. And I thought, well, this is quite good. Let's go down there. So we took off, and there was eight of us in our group, actually, and there was two vehicles. We went from a southern Israel, which is Eilat, and we had to cross over the border to get down to the southern Sinai. We went down to the place where the supposed Mount Sinai, because nobody knows if it's a Mount Sinai or not, and down there is the St. Catherine's Monastery, which is an old monastery built around about 500 AD, and that has the monks that are living there, the actually they're from Greek monks, Orthodox monks, and they've had this monastery for many years. When we went down there, it took us about 5 hour drive. It was a desert road. There was no towns, nothing all the way down there. In fact, I don't think we saw one vehicle on the whole journey. And lucky we had two vehicles. If we broke down, we'd need two vehicles there. We're talking about 2001 this happened, something like that. And when we got down to Mount Sinai, there were two guides with us. One was a Russian. She lived in Israel. And the other one was Egyptian. And they said that when we go to Mount Sinai, we're going to go to one of the summits there of the mountains and see a spectacular sunset. And my wife said she doesn't want to go all the way to the top. So there's a little kiosk there where they're selling Coca-Colas. Some Arabs had a little kiosk there, sort of in a tent. She said she'll stay there. So the Egyptian guide said she has to stay with her, wouldn't let her stay by herself. And off the rest of us went up to see the sunset. And when you get to there, you get to a part, don't go right from the bottom of the mountain to the top, it's too high. But there's an area where there's been some huge steps hewn out of the rocks, big steps, where it's easy to clamber up them instead of climbing the ropes. And they've been there for years. I don't know who put them up there, but obviously the monks might have put them there or had them carved up there. And we're walking up the steps. I'm in the rear of the convoy of us walking up. And I turn the calls up to the guard and says, I don't want to go to the top. I want to stay here. She said, why is that? I said, I'm not interested in the sunset. I feel there's more interest here. Pick me up on your way back. She said, it'll probably be about three quarters of an hour, half an hour, whatever. I said, it's fine. Because she just wanted to see the sun breaking over the mountain top. I said, okay. I looked down. They went off and I looked down. There was a valley below me. I'm looking at the picture now. All these pictures will be on my internet. It's a valley, and down there were some trees, and there's a lot of rocks there, and I seemed to be hypnotized, and something made me get up and recite out loud the Ten Commandments to the best of my knowledge, because I didn't know the Ten Commandments, but I knew thou shalt not steal, this, that, and the other. And I called out a few that come up, which I knew about, I heard, and as I did that, I realized that if Moses had called out the Ten Commandments, or the Ten Commandments were called out, and thousands of people, the Israelites apparently, there were quite a lot of them, on the Exodus, and if they had to hear him, there were no microphones or anything. Whether it was this mountain or another mountain, but a mountain range, when I called out, my voice echoed right across the mountains. And this would be a way how everybody could have heard it. So I realized that, you know, that I discovered something quite interesting, because no one's ever spoke about this before. After about a few minutes, my wife comes walking up, and we're just around a slight incline, with the actual guide with her, and she says she heard all this noise, and she said, what's going on? And I explained to her what happened, and I said this seemed a spiritual place, and the Egyptian said, yes, it is a spiritual place. What made you say that? I said, well, I just feel it. He said, well, the Bedouins come here. The Bedouins are the tribe of Arabs that roam the desert looking after their sheep and cattle, and they go from one place to another looking for grass or whatever they can eat. And he says, they come here once a year and they get visions and that they meditate here, so it's quite an interesting place. And that night we slept in tents, and I was talking to the guide, and I said to him, I've got some drawings. This other drawing Joyce drew. Joyce even drew a man with a spear in front of the cave, and another drawing of the desert where the area and stuff like that. And I'm telling the guy not too much, and I said, do you know anything about the western desert in Egypt? Because this was the area we were supposed to find the cave. And he says, yes, he says, it looks like this with all slight hills on it and stuff like that, according to the drawings I had. And we thought that was quite interesting. So he says, I'm going to show you something on the way back. I don't normally do this, but the next day we went to St. Catherine's Monastery. You've heard of St. Catherine Monastery, haven't you?
Sure.
Kevin?
Sure.
And we went in there, and they said we've got about an hour to go in there. The tours guys wouldn't take us in there. They said, don't talk to the monks because none of them speak English. Just go in there for an hour, look around, come outside, and then we'd journey back to Israel. We went in there, And something made me walk over. I just didn't know why. I just walked over to one of the monks and I just says, hi, sort of thing. And he says, hi. I said, you speak English? And he says, yes, perfect English. I thought, this is unusual, considering no one's supposed to speak English. And I quickly spoke to him about the Ark of the Covenant. I didn't tell too much psychic stuff. And he says, yes, he knows about the Ark of the Covenant. He says, I want to take me and my wife to an area in the monastery which is out of bounds, and it's their holy spot. I says, why do you want to show me that? He said, I just feel I want to show it to you because I just feel we need to see it. So he took us downstairs or to a chamber or a room, whatever it was, and this was the holy spot. And while Mary was talking to him, I took a few shots with my camera, and we took a lot of pictures when we were there in the monastery. And then he took us up to the ancient library. They've got a library there which is quite old. In fact, the other ancient library is in the Vatican, and that's one of the oldest libraries in the world, and this is the second oldest apparently. And he took us into this room, also out of bounds, and we're looking at the volumes on the wall. I didn't know, touch any of the books, I just looked around. And he went out to arrange some tea for us, and there was a big glass case, and in this glass case was a huge book opened up with a drawing. It was a very old book, and it was a drawing of the Ark of the Covenant with Moses coming down the mountain and all this stuff on there. And I tried to take a picture of my camera behind glass, and in those days we never had digital cameras. I didn't know if the picture came out or not, but it didn't come out anyhow. We had our tea, and we had to get out because the hour was finished, and we went in the two vehicles back to Israel. But a couple of miles from where the monastery was, he stopped, and they stopped, and he said, I'm going to show you something. And over a small hill, we stopped and just walked up a little hill and looked down, and there was a huge mountain with a carving of a calf in the mountain. It was about 40 or 50 foot long, enormous. And I said, what is it? He says, he doesn't know. And I thought to myself, well, the only recollection with the calf was a golden calf. When Moses came down with the Ten Commandments, he found the Israelites praying to a calf because they thought Moses disappeared. It took him a few days up there. And when he came down, he says, you mustn't have a golden calf. There's no idols. And they melted the gold down again, and they made the Ark of the Covenant. Apparently in Exodus, it mentions that when Moses brought to take the children of Israel out of bondage from Egypt, he mentions three times that they have to bring gold jewelry with them. They have to bring gold out. Now, why would they need gold to go into the desert, to go to the so-called promised land? If they're going to wander around for quite a long time, they'd need livestock or food, weapons, whatever that they'd need, but they wouldn't need gold, there's nothing to buy. But apparently he must have known that he needed the gold to make the Ark of the Covenant, because in Exodus it doesn't say Moses put the Ark in a box. It goes into full detail, full description, like a template, that the Ark of the Covenant has to be made, blah 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 blah. There's 10 verses in one of the chapters. So he had a template and knew it had to be made of gold. It's possible, I won't say it's true or not, it's possible that as Moses was brought up by the pharaohs, he would have known more about the pyramids and Giza Plateau, what we know of today. And he might have known that there was a chamber in one of the pyramids where possibly a golden box was there. And inside the golden box there were these writings or some scrolls or stones, and he couldn't remove the box, but he would have removed these stones. And naturally, when he went out to Mount Sinai, it needed this box to make it. It was too heavy for him to carry out anyway. Remember, it's made of gold and wood and probably weigh about 200 pounds, enough for people to carry. So this golden calf could have been there or not, we don't know. But we got back to Israel, and I'm in one of the museums, and most of the museum, when you go in a museum, there's normally a gift shop out on the way out, where you can buy books and souvenirs and stuff like that. And the museum was the Museum of Weizmann. It was the House of Weizmann, where he was the first president of Israel. And they had all his little bits and pieces, his desk there, and all these things all numbered. It didn't. I said to Mary, quickly get out, this doesn't interest me. And as we're going out, we're all in this little gift shop, and I found myself walking to the back of the gift shop, behind the counter, and there was no door but a little room at the back. And while the salesman was serving the customers, there was only one guy in there serving. In the back, it was a dimly lit, I could see a big map. And I came out and I said to the guy, I'd like to buy that map that's on the wall. I didn't know what it was, I just knew it was a map and I felt I had to buy it. He said, you can't buy it because it's something that's in the museum, but we don't know where, we can't mark it of who donated it or where it come from. We put a number on it and that's it. I said, well, can I take a photograph of it? He says, yes, and they took it out. We took it outside in the daylight because it'd be better light. I took a picture of it. The picture didn't come out too well. It was, of course, it was glass covered and too much reflection. But when we got home, we found out that this was a map, an old map of the Exodus. The map was so old that north wasn't on the top of the page. It was to the left, and you had to turn the whole thing round to see it was the Exodus. Hopefully one day I can go back there and get a better picture of it. But when we got back to Spain, we found that all the pictures I took in Israel came out, except the pictures I took of the holy area in the monastery were blank. Four frames what I took were just black. It was as though I wasn't meant to take pictures in there. But when we were in Israel, I telephoned some people who worked in the university there, who we met actually in Gibraltar. And they said that we should go and see a psychic in Israel before we leave, named Menorah Charney. And she knew about what I was doing, but she wanted to do some meditation with me. And the last day we were in Israel, we went to see her. She lived in Tel Aviv. And after tea, she said she invited us there for lunch, but she said we can't do a session on a full stomach. She took me into a room where there was a little bed and a huge crystal hung over the bed. And she said, lay down there. We recorded the session. It was quite interesting because Moses started doing this talking through me, channeling, and explaining that it stolen the ark again, and that he'd be past a big tree, and I thought it was the tree that Joyce was talking about, another tree, on his route down to the desert. And I still didn't know why, and we couldn't get any information out why the ark would be in the western desert. It didn't make sense, and especially being in this cave or whatever it was. But what happened then, this woman Menorah, she wasn't Israeli, she was South African, she lived in Israel most of her life. She went into trance. She says it's something afterwards that she's never done before. She normally has to stay awake because if I'm in trance, she has to guide me through it. But she went in trance and she says, yes, there is an ark and there is an entity called Mosek, and the ark will be found, but not yet. The time has to be right. Anyhow, we go back to Spain, and a few months later, I'm taking one of my dogs for a walk. We've got two dogs, and I take one of them out, they're big German shepherds. And walking at the top of the hill, we live in the just off the main road, about 200 metres from the actual coast and sea. And I'm taking the dog for a walk, and I'm passing one of our neighbour's houses, who I've rarely talked to, and I stopped, and he said, his daughter's over here from England. And I said, oh, and I saw her in the garden, and I waved to her, and he whispered to me, he says, if she talks to you any strange things, don't take any notice, because she's always has visions of ghosts and different things like this, and she didn't believe in all of that. And I said, okay. And she says, can I come and walk with you with the dog? I said, yeah. And she introduced herself as Dawn. And we're walking along, and she just blurted out, am I looking for something in Solomon's temple? And I looked at this strange girl and I said, what makes you say that, Dawn? She said, I don't know, but I feel you're looking for something in Solomon's Temple, and that's all I can give you. Can I see you tomorrow? Very strange woman. And I said, yeah. She says, okay, I'll come and see you tomorrow. And she went back, went off. Next day she comes in clutching two pieces of paper. She says, this is a drawing of what you're going to find. And she drew again, to my amazement, the Ark, an illustration of the Ark of the Covenant. And she wrote on it, Ark of the Covenant. I said, you know what this is? She says, yes. She says, something you're going to find. I said, well, why should I find this? She says, I don't know. I just feel you're going to find it. She says, I've also got a drawing of your spirit guide. And she gave me a drawing. It was nowhere as good a drawing as Joyce could do, because this girl wasn't an artist. She was about 35 years old, and she just was like a kid's sketch sort of thing. But the drawing she did was a guy with a lot of hair, and this was completely reverse to what Joyce had done. Joyce did it all with white hair. She did it all with black hair. In fact, the whole drawing was black. And when she did this drawing, she also had a V-shaped beard, exactly like the drawing of Joyce. And she would, no way she would have known what Joyce had done or anything. I never spoke to anybody or shown anything to anybody. And when I compared Joyce's picture to that in front of her, and I said, look, another sight article, I got a magnifying glass, looked in the right eye, and lo and behold, was a drawing in the eye of a map of the Sinai, exactly what Joyce had drawn. And you've seen all that, so you can confirm all that, can't you, Kevin?
That is correct. I have seen it.
It was amazing that two people come with the same thing. Anyhow, a few months later, we had some money, and I said to Mary, you know, last time I was in Egypt when I was in the army, let's go and see the pyramids and have a tour of Egypt. So we went over to Egypt, had a weekend on the Nile, cruise on the Nile, and then we had a week in the Giza Plateau. But before we left Spain, there's a friend of mine who I'd met through some different courses we went on, elderly woman, and I'm calling everybody elderly, I'm 77, so to me that they were elderly at that time. And she says that, you know, Jerry, I come up with a lot of things that I come up with and different things. And she says that she knows a woman who did some dowsing. We should go and meet her and give her a map. I don't know, I've acquired a huge map, ordnance map, about 4 foot square, of Egypt, the Sinai, the Western Desert and all that. And she says, let's go and see this dowser, give her the map and see if she comes up with.
Alright, we have to step away for a break, and we will be back, ladies and gentlemen, in just a little bit. Jerry Cannon is telling us about his search for the Ark. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are talking this evening with Jerry Cannon, and he's telling us about this amazing journey of his on the way to searching for the Ark of the Covenant. Jerry, let's get to Egypt and the story of the actual search. What's going on in Egypt? What happened?
Well, very quickly, this Mallory did the dowsing, and her hand went down on the area in the Western Desert on the map, and her hand was hot. She says, this is where the Ark will be found. She says, but you should be meeting a guy called Robert Bovell. He wrote a book about the Orion mystery, He's Egyptian. He lived in England. I contacted him, went to see him a few times, and he said I should meet up with a guy from the Edgar Cayce Foundation called Joseph Shaw. He's a multimillionaire in New York. We were invited over to see him, and apparently they did some work under the Sphinx looking for the Halls of Record, wherever it was. Anyway, when I was in Egypt, I wanted to go into the Great Pyramid, and when I got there, I never had a ticket. I forgot to get a ticket. And it was just closing, and I said to the guard at the entrance to the Great Pyramid, can I come in? He says, no. I said, well, can I pay for the ticket? He says, no. I said, how can I get in there? He says, the only way you're going to get in is get a permit from Dr. Hawass, who's in charge of the antiquities. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, where is he? He said, well, he's in America at the moment, but there's some offices around the back of the Giza Plateau where all the archaeologists, not their main office, the main office in Cairo, where they all sit. And I went out to see them, and after a few minutes I got friendly with all the top officials there, and all of a sudden I'm sitting in the office and the Egyptian comes in, talks a lot in Arabic, didn't understand it, and the guy behind the desk who I was talking to, named Mohammed Shiha, he says to me, Dr. Wasser just arrived. He says, we didn't expect him. And I says, can I see him and get a permit? He said, well, she's going to go and talk to him. So he went in, came out. He said, Doctor, I'll see you in a few minutes. Went in to see Dr. Hawass. And he says, why do you want to go in there? I'm an archaeologist. I said, no. I mentioned that I knew Joseph Shaw. And as soon as I did that, his eyes lit up, because apparently he knew Joseph Shaw well, because he'd been over there many times. And I got a permit to go into the Great Pyramid on my own. And something happened in there was the Queen's Chamber was closed to all tourism anyway, and they let me go into the Queen's Chamber, and I went in there with another Egyptian guide, and when I went in there I went over to the north wall in the Queen's Chamber, put my hands up on the wall and closed my eyes, and after a couple of minutes I felt my whole body moving into the wall. It was a strange thing happened. I told the guide and he did it, and he said, let's get out of here. He got frightened. And I got friendly with everybody, including a guy called Adel Hassan, who was the director of the Giza Pyramids. And I got real friendly with him, and I went to see him on other occasions. And after our trip to Egypt, I'm back again in Spain, and I thought to myself, I better go out there again. I've got the feeling of Egypt. I know Egypt now. I should go out and take a look for this cave or whatever Joyce was telling me about. And I thought, where am I going to find it? So I looked on the internet, and I found out there was a guy who goes to different coordinates. It's a club they've got. Let's say you went to 25 north, 25 east, and you come to a specific point. They would mark it with a stick and say, this is, they've been there, the first person to be there. And I saw one of his pictures, and a picture he took of the area showed a pyramid sort of a hill, and that was near the area which I thought was on the map. So I met some people on the internet. One of them was named Richard, and we got a team of four other guys to come with us. Went to Egypt, and I had this area marked out, and actually it was about 150 miles from civilization, and we had to get to Coptic monks monastery to pass on the way. There was two monasteries, one the south of the map and one of the north of the map, and we went to the one on the south of the map because it looked easy access. But when we got there, we found that was the wrong place, and we had the police escort to take us to the other one, because you can't drive around on your own. We met some monks at a place called Wadi Rayan. They're living in caves. They've been living in caves for years, and that was their chapel and everything in there. When we saw them, which was on our route there, we were told that they knew something was out in the desert when we pointed the area we wanted to go and visit, but they knew something was spiritual there, but they didn't know what, and they just felt that there. Anyhow, we had to get back to Cairo 2 days later, because Richard's girlfriend was coming over from America, and we had to pick her up at the airport, so we didn't have much time. But the following day, we started going out to the area where we believe this hill was. And when we got close to it, about 15 kilometers or 15, whatever it was, a sandstorm blew up. And then, remember, there was five of us in this trip. And we said, we can't go on. We have to turn back, because if we get stuck in the sandstorm, we've had it. But we clambered up one of the drifts of sand drift, and we could see in the distance some sort of a mountain up there which looked like it had a peak on it. So we all went back to our own countries, and about 3 months later I found that Richard and another guy went out alone, because we made a pact we were going to go out there a year later or a few months later to go and find this place again, but we found they went behind my back and they went out alone. But apparently one of them got ill and they couldn't find it, and Richard went out two or three times afterwards and he couldn't find it. Apparently he went on to another path of working on things on the Ark of the Covenant, things about the pyramids. And I said to him while we were there, I said to him, let's go and see if we can get into the Great Pyramid, because he wanted to go in there. And I said to Adele, gave us a permit to go in there. He said, well, before you go in, you can walk around. I said, well, when I come back, Adele, I'm going to give you some information about the Sphinx. And he says, what are you talking about? I said, I don't know, but I'm going to go around the pyramids and I'm going to come back with it. What made me say I don't know? Anyway, I went into the second pyramid, and when I came out, I realized that the Sphinx is not in the center. It's about 600 meters away from the pyramid, second pyramid, but it's to the left of the pyramid if you're looking straight onto it. And when I came out, I saw a mound of sand to the right of it. And there's a big mound, so I went back to Adele. I said, Adele, I said, I think there may be a second Sphinx buried there. And he says, it's possible, because it's never been investigated, that mound. And this was possibly the thing that Gilman Joyce said, I'm going to find something else out there. I did a lot of research on that later. Anyhow, as I say, the guys later on went behind my back. They couldn't get there. And I went out a second time with another guy. In fact, the guy introduced me to the Mormon in America. I thought he was a good guy to come with. I still didn't want to go alone. And we looked around for 2 weeks, couldn't find any caves whatsoever with a driver. And then I thought, I'm going to go again one more time with my own driver. And I went out there the third time with another driver, and his name was Abdul. I've written a manuscript about all this, which all the complete story is that we couldn't get all this in 2 hours, but you can read about all this and see it on the internet, on my website. Anyhow, we couldn't find anything. So I went off again with Abdul, just me alone, and we went 2 weeks again. We could not find any caves. And I said to Abdul, I've wasted my life. I've wasted nearly 18 years at the time, like 18 or 16 years, looking for this cave and the research what I've been doing, and I've neglected my family, my kids and friends and that there. Well, I never had much time for all of these, because I was working on this more or less every day, different things happening. And I said, you know, there's no such cave. I'm on a wild goose chase. I said, there's a place I want to visit called the Bahrain Oasis, which is further south from here. And it's a place where Dr. Hawass and the antiquities have found a treasure trove of golden mummies. Do you hear about that? Have you heard about that?
Oh, yeah.
Kevin?
Sure.
Apparently a wealthy landowner there collecting all these treasures and stuff like that there. And he was down there, and this was here I wanted to visit. And I knew some of the archaeologists who I met in Egypt who was in charge of that, and I wanted to go and talk to him. I said, we'll go there, forget the cave, there's no such cave. And I laughed. I said, if anyone's going to find a cave, it's probably you'll find it more than I will. And I fell asleep. After seeing about 10 minutes, I don't know how long it was, he's waking me up. Jerry, I found the cave. I thought, a dream, this cannot be true. There's all bones around it. No, I says, this is a dream. I says, Abdul, pinch me. This is a dream, this isn't true. He says, no, look. And he stepped out the truck, and in front of me was a freestanding cave. It was exactly the same as what Joyce had drawn to the T. The contours of it, you've seen this, you've seen it, so you know it was there, what I'm talking about. The contour of it, exactly the same. And all around the cave were bones, skeleton bones. I said to Abdul, I said, let's take a picture of this. I want to take a picture of the landscape. So we went back a few hundred yards, and I took a panoramic picture. By now I had a digital camera, and I took a movie from the panning from the left to the right. And when I got to the cave area, I paused because behind the cave was a pyramid flat top mountain, exactly what was on the drawing which I stamped. In front of the cave was a dried up river. And there was all like twigs around there, and Abdul said, this is a dried up river, you know, a little bit of our archaeology. So I stopped looking, he said, we can't camp here tonight because it's too windy, very, very windy where we were. The wind was blowing up. He said, I'll find a place that we can camp in the back of the cave. And I was looking at the bones. A few minutes later, he came over. He said, there's another entrance to the cave, actually. It's quite larger, but they're both sand-filled. And the front of the back sand-filled, which is the other landmark that Joyce has given me. I found all the landmarks. He says, I'm going to sleep in the little tent, and you'll have to sleep in the truck. There's no room in the tent. But get some brushwood or whatever we can find to make a fire. And I went out a few yards away from where the caves were, the other side, and as I'm picking up the branches in front of me, I look up, there's a huge, huge tree in the shape of a rock. So we found all the landmarks of Joyce. It was
wait a minute, it's a tree in the shape of a rock? Or a rock in the shape of a tree?
It was a rock in the shape of a tree.
Okay.
It was huge. It had like a stem on the bottom. You saw the picture of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we found everything that should be said. So there has to be either the ark, an ancient copy, or something there. There's no way. She predicted everything else. It was all true. And everything she did was true. And to find all this, there has to be something there. So I said, well, okay, I slept in the truck in the middle of the night. He's banging on the window saying, what's going on in there? He spoke perfect English. I said, he woke me up. I said, what's the matter up there? He says, I heard voices in the truck. I says, are you dreaming? He says, no, it woke me up. That's why I'm here. Who's in there with you? I said, there's no one in the truck with me. I'm only in the truck sleeping on the back bench. He said, well, I heard voices and I heard a lot of things going on in there. I said, you go back to sleep. You must have been dreaming. I believe either I was channeled or somewhere with Moses in my sleep or something happened, because the next morning the whole story unfolded. Apparently Moses had stolen the ark, was taking it down to the Bahrain oasis to being sold to a wealthy man. Actually they didn't have money, they would have paid him in gold. And him and his band of men were stopped at this cave on the way.
All right. We're going to get the rest of that story when we come back from break. When we come back from break, we'll have 10 to 12 minutes left, and we'll be on Final Approach. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Jerry Cannon, and he's telling us about really an amazing story of his search for the lost Ark of the Covenant. Did he find it? Well, we're going to find out when we come back. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with Jerry Cannon, and he's telling us about his adventure in searching for the Ark of the Covenant. Jerry, we're on Final Approach, and that means we've got about 9.5 minutes left.
Okay, I'm going to rush it in. Okay, Moses heard his men conspiring because they never weren't getting enough reward, so he poisoned them all. But before he poisoned all the poison took effect, the guy that was guarding the cave, apparently with a spear, this could have been the drawing that Joyce had drawn, killed him. So everybody died, and the ark is in the cave, and of course been buried over the time with sand. We went down to the Bahrain Oasis, and I found out the guy that who was the wealthy man, who was also like the pharaoh of the land, his name was Dejed Khonsu F. Ankh. I won't say, it takes too long. But apparently when I did the time frame, he lived in the 26th dynasty. And in round about that time, covered the same time when Solomon's temple was built. So it all looked like it was the guy. But something else I checked out was that he was, this guy Dejed, was the high priest of Egypt. So he would have wanted the ark more than any other treasure he could think of, because he wanted it for his temple. He probably knew that the Israelites had had this. So everything matched. So it looks like we found something. But when we went back to a few days later, I met a guy. He was the ex-Secretary General of the United Nations, and I explained what the role of the Ark would be, and I met him. He invited me to his office in a few minutes, an hour's notice. We had to go and see him. But very quickly before that, my friend Janet met a guy in England who was Channel Horus. And he said he should tell me that the word wandering would tell me about the Ark of the Covenant. When I heard that, I realized the role of the Ark of the Covenant. When it's found, a lot of people want to see it. And after it's been tested by radiocarbon dating, probably a grain of a piece of wood from the pole, if it is the Ark, then, or an ancient copy, it would be great. It would go on display on every major city for the people to see. And as it leaves one place, a replica of the art will be made, and whatever's in it will be going to the replica just to energize it, and the real art will go off with the real contents. There'll be no charge for admission, but they can donate. A lot of people are going to have some spiritual inclination after seeing it. And all this money would go, with nothing to do with me, to a world organization where there'd be millions of dollars, and all that would be to help this planet, in other words, for medical research, AIDS, cancer, planetary investigations, global warming, where there's a disaster on the world, there'd be an untold amount of money. Once a year it would go back to Israel for, on display, because the Ark's mentioned in not only the Old Testament, the New Testament, but also in the Quran, so it belongs to everybody. We all know about it. And this would be the role of the Ark. And when I spoke to this Brutus Garley, he says, well, the only way we get out of Egypt is if the Egyptians would get a percentage of this money, that promote them to go out. So that's where we're at. But we realised that I couldn't dig anywhere near the cave, because one would know whether to look inside, outside the area, so it would need ground penetrated radar. And this is the next step. But to get ground penetrated radar, we need a permit to get it out there. And the only way we're going to do that is to have an archaeologist to get involved to look for this second sphinx, because this area has never been checked out. And when he goes out there, I can help with a permit, because I know quite a few people over there. The Egyptians wouldn't give me a permit, and Dr. West at the time was in charge, because I'm not an archaeologist, but if I was affiliated with a university, something could happen. So we need to get a ground penetrated radar of the Sphinx, and I've got a guy who can do that. He's an Italian guy. He's ready to go, but he needs a permit. If we can get him to with his equipment over there.
Well, what is the connection between doing archaeology on this second Sphinx and being able to look for this Ark of the Covenant?
Well, to get the equipment over there, we can't just tell him we're going to go and look for the Ark of the Covenant. So that we have to have some method to get the equipment over there to look for the second Sphinx. If we find the second Sphinx, great. If we don't, we've got our equipment over there, and then we can scan the area for the cave. And once we've scanned the area for the cave, according to my guy, I told him he knows the area, what it looks like from pictures, he says he can detect something. It won't show if it's the Ark, but it will show a shadow of an oblong box if it's something's under there, and also if it's made of metal. So we can detect that. And once we've detected that, then we have to go to some big boys, governments or whatever it is, because we'd have to have some evidence. And if we find the second Sphinx, of course they're going to listen to me, that there's another Ark, that the Ark of the Covenant is there, or it's called an Ark. And this is where we're at now. So we're looking, hopefully, someone out there, I'm doing these radio shows, that we're going to get an archaeologist interested in the second Sphinx, so we can promote it all. Now, I believe you'll give out my website on there.
Yeah, go ahead and tell us your website address.
Okay, it's www.jerrysarquest.com. It's Jerry with a G. GERRYSARQUEST.com. One of the interviews I had, he put a YouTube up with all these pictures and everything on there. If you go to my first page on there, you can actually see, I think, about a 3-hour session, or quite a bit more that I could relate in this 2 hours, with all the pictures and everything else. There's also five first pages of my book, which explain how we found this cave. And also you'll read a 14-page article with a lot of pictures of a second Sphinx. And hopefully the archaeologists will pick this up and contact me through my website. So there about we have it. I think we're nearly time up, aren't we, Kevin?
Yes, we are. Now, you're up to it and ready to go if you get an archaeologist, right? You're ready to go back out there and dig up the ark if it's there.
Yeah. As soon as we get a permit from the with the archaeologist and affiliated other institution or university, we get the permit, and when we're over there, we're not digging it up. We're just going to look to see what the ground penetrating radar will find out there. And once we've got that, as I say, we've got to go to the big boys and get them to organize everything else. I'm out of the picture. I've done my job. That's my job finished.
All right. It's a lot of information, and as you've noticed, folks, I've stayed on the side a lot tonight because I've heard this story, and I knew there was a lot to it. So it's kind of, it's not like the movie Indiana Jones, but it's kind of real-life Indiana Jones in that it's a search for the Ark, and Jerry thinks he's found the location where it may be hidden. So it'll be worth watching this story to see what's going to come of it. Jerry, if you will, just stay on the line with me for a moment as I bring this flight in for a landing. Ladies and gentlemen, don't forget, tonight is K-Files night. That means we begin sending out this week's edition of the K-Files after the show. That's just in a few minutes. So if you have not subscribed to our free weekly newsletter, do it right now. And activate your subscription in that email you're going to get. Click that link and activate your subscription, and then you'll be on the list to get this week's edition of the K-Files. Also, remember, this show is 100% listener-supported, and we have a members community with a whole bunch of other features and benefits for you for supporting this show. So become a member. Nobody but you can fix it if you're not a member. And the way you fix it is you click that great big button on my website that says join. That's how you do it, okay? And even if you're not sure whether you want to become a member, click where it says join and take the little tour to see what's in the members community. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too, and you may call me whatever you'd like to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.